Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions. I am Yudali Wickham Ashby, and today we will be discussing disability as usual. I have on the line with me to share a bit of his personal story, Winston Callender. Hi, Winston, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Yudali. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Winston, those of us who don't know you, I should say those individuals who do not know you, hearing your voice, because, you know, sometimes people think that once you have a disability, it should be very pronounced, very noticeable, should be written all over you that I have a disability. But
yeah,
persons looking at you may not even recognize that you have a disability. Share with us what is or what has led you to having a disability.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I am a double amputee, below the knee amputee. It was called bilateral. I've been this way for the last 34 years. Acquired when I was 14 years old. Had leptospirosis and bad circulation, so lost both legs. Yeah, it is true that a lot of people don't know that I have a disability, and they're very surprised when I say that because they don't use any devices, so to speak. Don't use any canes or walk or anything like that. So it is a little surprising to people when they do say that I have a disability.
All right, so take us back, Winston, to when you were 14 years old. How did you feel when you realized that you were ill, and as a result of that illness, having contracted leptospirosis, that you had to lose not just one leg, but both legs?
Well, at that moment, it was a little scary. I must admit, it was a little scary. You don't know what the future holds. And back then, it was, 1985. So we didn't know that much about disabilities in Barbados. So it was a lot. It was really scary. You know, being an active young man, always out playing football, cricket, stuff like that, running around, then to be told that you're going to lose both legs, and it's a matter of life or death. It's either you choose to give up your legs, so to speak, or there's a possibility that you may die. So at the end of the day, I only had one choice. You know, in consultation with my mom, we decided to go this route, and, you know, down through the years, it has been challenging, but I'm still here, 48, going on 49 years, so I'm thankful.
Okay, so Winston, you mentioned your mom. What about the support that came from your family? What was that like?
I come from a pretty big family. At the time, we were living at my grandmom, and there was a lot of family members living there as well. I think the support, it wasn't what I would have liked it to be, but they did their best. You know, as I say, disability is something that is not well known and was well accepted in Barbados. So it was a lot challenging with your family. You know, you had to deal with the everyday things that happens in families. You know, they're not going to treat you any differently. They're going to be harsh sometimes. But I think from my brother, my little brother, and my two sisters and my mom, they always took care of me to a certain extent, but I still had to find a way to take care of myself.
Okay. Did this interrupt your education? Did you have
And it wasn't the fault of anyone saying, telling me not to go, but I think the fear setting, the fear of the unknown, and the embarrassment and whatever else comes along with being in that situation. And I decided not to go back to school, which in the end turned out to be a big mistake, I would say.
Okay. So after you lost your legs, you recuperated, what did you do?
I stayed home for about 3 years. Just stayed home, doing nothing really. Looking through the window, feeling sorry for myself, going through all those emotions. But eventually, a neighbor came and talked to me and encouraged me to get up and find something to do, so to speak. And at the time, the DLP government was in power under Erskine Sandefur's administration. And I had a meeting with the Minister of Education at the time, who was Mr. Keith Simmons. And he encouraged me to go to the Polytechnic and learn a trade, which I did. I wanted to do cabinet making. But when I got there, it was suggested to me that I do something more, which would put me in a position where I'd be sitting more. So I ended up doing shoe repair and shoemaking.
Okay. So share a little about that journey of going to classes. At that time, did you have prosthesis?
Oh, yes, yes. I was on my second pair of prosthetics when I first went to the Polytechnic. But in my initial having the prosthetics, I didn't want to use them. I would just put them in the corner and we'll practice, stuff like that. I guess it was more called embarrassment, and had to do with the environment I was living in as well. It wasn't a very encouraging environment, so all of that was in play. But eventually, one of my cousins encouraged me to come outside and play some cricket. And went outside, it was just to get a little fresh air. And eventually, we would go outside almost every evening and we would play cricket, and that helped to increase the confidence a little. And it grew from there. So by the time he suggested to me that I go and look for something to do, so to speak, to support myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, I decided by that time the confidence had grown enough for me to take that step.
Wonderful. That is really good. All right, so actually being in class now and learning the shoemaking trade, what was that experience like?
It was good. It was really good because the instructor at the time, his name was Mr. Eric Watson. He deceased now. We call him Sir. Yeah, everyone who knew Mr. Watson, they always call him Sir. He was very encouraging, very patient. He would scold you when he had to, but he was an excellent teacher. You know, he talks to you not just about shoemaking, but about manhood, you know. And so that made things a lot easier for me. Persons who were in the class at the time and who knew that I had a disability, they were trying to help as much as they could. But I'm a sort of introvert guy, so I wasn't very outspoken and stuff like that. But I went there to learn a trade, and that's what I basically concentrated on, because I felt that at that time I needed to do something to support myself. I didn't want to be a partner, you know, to be a burden on anyone. So I wanted to learn something to support myself.
Okay. So after you completed your education, what was the next step? Did you find employment immediately? Did you go the route of self-employment? How did you proceed?
From the Polytechnic, I went to work at Mr. Watson's workshop, which was in Spikestone, Church Street, Spikestone. It's no longer there. It's closed now. And I stayed there with him for a number of years, maybe 10 years or so. First, it started as a part-time thing, because he was still teaching at the Polytechnic at the time. And then it became a full-time job, and it was there for a while, for 10 years, learning the trade, working alongside him and stuff like that. And then I left from Mr. Watson and then went to Bridgestone to work for a gentleman by the name of Gerald Bryan. He was running a shoe factory in Grisettes at the time. And he had a repair shop in Bridgestone. So it was back and forth between the manufacturing plant and the repair plant for a number of years.
Well, I'm really pleased to know that you were able to get into part-time and later full-time employment that allowed you to earn your own income and to sustain, support yourself, and also extend that helping hand to others as well.
Yes.
So, Winston, how did you feel? Talk about the emotional side of being employed, because sometimes I think people underestimate the power of positiveness that comes from being able to work, particularly as a person with a disability.
Oh, man, that's a great feeling. It feels good to know that you can be independent to a certain extent, because we all still need a little help here and there, you know. I think best way to explain for you is that it's when I was able to purchase my first pair of prosthetics, I was able to save my money and purchase my first pair of prosthetics. That feeling was like, well, you know, I'm able to do this for myself. Instead of having to depend on someone else, I was able to do it for myself, and that felt great. Being able to make a contribution and help my mom build her own house and stuff like that, you know, that all those things really felt good at the time. And it was, you know what, really, when I was in it, it didn't feel like I was doing something miraculous or, you know, something like that. It just felt normal. It felt like normal. You're just doing what you're supposed to do as a member of the society.
Right.
Live, make a contribution, help out your family, pay your bills, you know, buy food, stuff like that. So it just felt normal.
Right. Regular stuff.
Regular stuff, yes, exactly.
Yes. All right, so Winston, then something major happened in your life. another step that is normal, that is regular, where guy sees a girl, falls in love, or grow in love, and next step, get married, live happily ever after. Of course, a few problems in between.
Yeah, definitely.
So, share with us how you met your wife, and what was it like for you?
Well, let me first go back to organizations. The work that organizations do within Barbados, because I think that's important. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the wife, I don't think I would have the wife. But the organization which I'm a part of and you are a part of is Barnon Inc.
Right.
And the year that Barnon came into my life, I was in a dark place.
Okay.
You know, although you're a young man in your 20s and you don't see a clear road ahead of where you're going, or what you want to do in life and stuff like that. And at that time, my best friend, his name is Perry Holloway, we call him Perry, someone introduced you to him, and you told him about the organization, and he told me about it, and I thought, this sounds like something that I'd be very interested in joining, you know, something where I can express myself without feeling that someone is judging me, because there are other persons like me who has a disability in the organization. They may not understand, they may not feel what I'm feeling, but they can understand what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
Correct, yes.
Right. So I felt that I wanted to be a part of the organization. But we know our friend Perry, he could be a little stubborn sometimes. But I was trying to get him to, let's go to a meeting, and he would keep saying no, no, no. But then I went to a meeting, and I came back and told him, and then he came to the next meeting. But that first meeting that I went to, when I got there weren't many young people there at the time. But what was being spoken of and things that were being spoken, I felt, this is exactly what I need in my life right now. I just needed something to be, some stability, so to speak. And so I joined the organization. And then from there, we got introduced to certain programs which benefited us, you know, self-help programs, you know. I was able to go back to school and do a little English and mathematics through the organization, stuff like that. I was able to go to some seminars where you work on self-improvement and, you know, work on our health issues and stuff like that, which was important, right? The confidence grew more, the ability to communicate and to deal with other persons and stuff like that. Although I was in the service industry, I was always, I still is up to today, I'm more of a quiet guy who sits down and does my work and focus on my work instead of focusing on my surroundings, so to speak. And it's something that has been told to me over and over by various employees and employers and fellow employees. So it is something that I've had to deal with and continues to deal with up to today. But the organization of work really opened my eyes to a lot of things in Barbados and a lot of persons with disabilities. And my self-awareness started to grow. Now to the wife. My wife is also someone who has a disability, and we met through the organization. We were both in a program that the organization was running at the time. And the organization sent me to Guyana to represent them at a conference there. And when I came back, this was her first time coming to one of the seminars, and I saw her. And you know what it says, love at first sight. But it wasn't love at first sight. It was more like interest at first sight. I can remember sitting down, and I talked to myself, that girl looked really nice. I tried to find out who she was. You know, my friend Perry, he went and did the investigation for me. I came back and told me who she was and stuff like that. We introduced ourselves to each other, but we didn't see each other again for maybe a year. But she never left my mind, so to speak. And following that year, we had a phone conversation, and our friendship grew from there. But we didn't get together until maybe another 2 years or so. Because I was seeing someone else as well. And then that relationship broke up, and then we started to talk. And it grew from there. And
sounding like a really good
Then we got together, and in 2003, we became husband and wife.
Okay.
So this year we'll be celebrating our 17th anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Winston, how did your friends, your family, her family and friends reacted to the fact that both of you have disabilities? Because I know that there are some persons who feel very strongly that two persons with disabilities really should not get involved.
Yeah, that was mentioned. I don't think it was mentioned by my family or her family. I remember hearing it from a few friends. But at that time, I didn't care. I didn't care what anybody said. You know, I knew what I wanted in life, and I found it in her. So that was what mattered to me. You know, friends be damned, family be damned. I found what I wanted, and she found what she wanted. And in a man, I found what I wanted in a woman, and that was enough for me. I mean, we've had our challenges. Yes, that's true. And up to today, we are having our challenges. You know, my wife, at the moment, she's in the hospital. I'm home. It's very difficult at this time to see her, you know, because of the restrictions at the hospital and stuff like that. And that's so, along with what's going on in the country right now, we have to deal with all that.
Right.
But I won't change anything at all. I'm happy being her husband, and I know she's happy being my wife, and I won't change anything.
Okay, so Winston, some people would say, well, yes, you're happy, but how do you manage with the physical needs, the financial needs, the general needs that couples have? You're employed and she's not.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes that can be a strain, even when the husband and wife are both employed.
Yes, that is true. It is very difficult. The great thing about it is that we have family members and friends that if we do need anything, we can reach out to them and they do help out. You know, my wife, she does get assistance from government. As you said, I'm working. I have a full-time job. I'm working at a company near Shoe Care Services, which is located in Warrens. But because of the situation, everybody's home.
Yeah, with the COVID-19.
Exactly. So it is difficult. But by the grace of God, we continue to make it. You know, we have our mortgage to pay, which we are homeowners. We have our mortgage to pay, you know, other bills to pay as well. And we have other family members who live with us. You know, my sister-in-law, she lives with us, and she's shipping wherever she can to help out. So it is difficult, but we are making it work.
Right. So you mentioned that you have a mortgage to pay. Tell us about, again, your feelings, your excitement, I believe, in becoming a homeowner, because I know many persons would love to be able to experience being a homeowner.
Oh, it's a big challenge. It is a rewarding challenge. It feels so good to be able to say that you have, and that's always been one of my dreams, to be able to own our own. You know, we own our own home, well, to a certain extent, because we still have to pay our mortgage.
And,
right. You know, the bank will own it. But we could say we are homeowners. We had our own small business. My wife was running a small shop, which was attached to the house, but because of her illness and stuff like that, and the downturn in the economy at the time, we had to give up that shop. But it is a good feeling. It is tough, because as you say, with disability comes other challenges. You know, I'm at the age now where my joints are starting to hurt, and sometimes it hurts so badly that it's difficult to get out to work on sometimes. So it is one that I feel that it feels like an accomplishment, but it is still tough sometimes to maintain it. Let me put it that way.
Right,
but
right.
I won't change it because, as I say, at the end of the day, it's what we wanted and it's what we worked hard for and we fought for, and you know, we are going to try our best to maintain it.
Right. Now, Winston, most persons, whether married or not, do not really see impairments, illness, or certain challenges coming their way. None of us can really predict.
Yes, that's true.
You know, but how would you say that you and your wife are coping with the fact that she is now living with a chronic illness as well as her own disability?
Tough. It's very tough. You know, anyone who knows my wife Rosemary will know that she's a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's born with spina bifida, which is one of those diseases, not when I said these disabilities that attacks the nervous system and stuff like that. So she has problems with the way she walks, sensation in her feet and stuff like that. And she's been battling that. As I say, she's born with it, so she battled all of her life. And the challenges of being someone who has spina bifida. And now, because of the fact that she has so many infections and stuff known through the years, it has destroyed her kidney. So now she's a kidney, renal failure. She has renal failure, so she's on dialysis now. So that's tough. That's very tough. I won't tell anyone it's an easy road. You know, it is very tough on her, on her sister, on me, having to deal with it. But it's the life that we have, and we deal with it the best way we can. That's the best
way.
And
that's all we can do, try to deal with the many challenges that come our way as we grow, and as we grow older, really.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's no, as I keep saying to her, when she feels down, what other choice do we have but to fight? You know, you know, something, she has some very severe panic attacks, and the doctors say that's a part of renal failure, and there's a lot of persons that do suffer with that. So, but I say it's a big challenge, but we have to face it, and we are facing it daily. And we, some days it's very, very, I'm not going to tell anybody really that it's not tough. It is very, very tough. Very, very tough.
Well, Winston, that's how life goes sometimes. We are confronted with many challenges, but we also experience many joys of really living and celebrating life.
Yes,
so
we do.
As the time creeps upon us, just briefly speak to us, because earlier you spoke about getting involved with the organization Barnard, and mm-hmm. how it helped your confidence to grow and expose you to persons where you were able to spot the young lady that you wanted to share the rest of your life with. So how would you encourage other persons with disabilities to reach out as well so that they too can grow stronger, more confident, and of course learn different ways of coping? Because I think essentially it's really about how you cope, how you grow with your own disability.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that I will encourage. And even if you don't have a disability, but you still feel that, and not just Barnard, but any organization, once you find something that piques your interest and you feel that it could benefit your life in some way, I would encourage everyone to be a part of an NGO. It is rewarding. It can be challenging sometimes because, you know, you have to deal with other personalities and stuff like that, and it is challenging, but it is a part of growth. It is a part of expanding your horizon, so to speak, learning new things. Being a part of Barnard has taken me to parts of the Caribbean. You know, I've traveled, I've gone to seminars to represent the organization, I've sat with dignitaries and the common man, so to speak, and I've learned so much about the way how Barbados operates, how the world operates, and how people think, and how people see us, and what they think of us, and stuff like that. So I would encourage anyone to be a part of our organization. It helps. That's the best way I could put it. It helps.
And I must say thank you to you too, Winston, because you were part of the leadership of the organization, and obviously you contributed significantly to the growth of the organization as well, because you served as secretary, you served as treasurer, and
yes,
we know these are two posts that people generally shy away from.
I enjoy my role as treasurer, especially as treasurer of the organization, you know, being able to keep the organization afloat sometimes, which was very difficult sometimes, you know, limited amount of resources. I really enjoy that, but in growth, you have to sometimes move on so someone else could grow as well, so, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also want to say thank you and to so many other persons, as well as those without disabilities, who contribute not only to the development of the organizations, but to the growth of persons themselves, because many individuals have mentored persons with disabilities and have helped them to also learn new skills, develop confidence, and truly become a better person. So I want to say thank you to everyone.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with you and I concur. Before I go, Yuli, I just wanted to say thanks to all the members of the disabled community, members of our church, which is Chelsea Church of God, and our pastor, Pastor Pascal Perry, and members of the public who reached out to help. You know, my wife was in a very serious situation. She needed blood, and, you know, you guys really reach out. And although you may not have been able to give yourself, you were able to get in contact with persons who give, and I'm saying that it has worked. Your prayers and your giving has worked. I know her blood count has risen from very low to very high, the highest it has been in a long time. So I just want to say thanks to everyone who reached out with your prayers, your donation, your kind words. Just want to say thanks.
You are most welcome, Winston. Like I told some of the individuals who asked me if I went to donate blood, I said, well, I am one of these individuals who get scared. I don't think I'm scared of needles, but I just cannot explain that fear of donating blood. But like you said, I was able to rally a few persons to go and donate. So I am thankful that her blood level has risen and she's on a good road to recovery.
Yes, all the indications point to positive, very positive. So we're hoping that she'll be home soon.
Well, we believe that she will be home soon.
Yes, thank you.
Well, Winston, I want to say thank you very much for sharing so openly with us and allowing persons to have a greater insight as to how you cope, how you have grown, and how you are living and celebrating life with your family. And we want to say thank you very much for your contribution.
All right, thank you, Julie, and anytime.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Good day.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudali Wickham Ashby, and today my special guest was Winston Callender. Remember, you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300, as well as via email, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And, of course, you can check this and previous episodes on VOB929.com website. Look for the podcast link and scroll until you find Visions, and you'll be able to listen to this and past episodes. So until next week, stay safe and enjoy life.